This city is yours, and you're not gonna let some mass criminals take it away from you. Isn't that right?
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
We are so back.
We're so back. We're good. We're good. So, yeah, like, first up, Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts. Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts.
Did the trailer... Oh my God, yes, because the day before, the day we recorded the last episode, the next day.
Literally the next day.
The Fantastic Four official trailer dropped.
Less than 10 hours after. I was like.
I remember texting you. I was like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
The audacity of these guys.
Yeah, drop the trailer.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Okay.
The full trailer, yes. Everything after and everything before, no.
Okay, well, that was it.
But yeah, very interesting. I have not watched it more than twice.
Oh, I watched it.
Because I wanted to make... Yeah, I didn't want to notice stuff. But, you know, because things are coming together. But the fam looks good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling the energy. I like the personalities that are coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Already in love with Vanessa Kirby. It's done. I'm in love with her as Sue.
I agree.
So good. Pedro, of course, my king, my queen. Love it. Yeah, it looks very promising. Silver Surfer. I know a lot of people have thoughts, as they do. I think it's an interesting look. I feel like it's not finished, but the final product will probably blow our minds.
Why does she need to look more sleek? Silver?
Maybe a little more sleek. I think I need to
get used to the fact. Shiny almost.
Yeah. And she also has short hair, right?
She did, I think. Julia. Yeah,
she had short hair, I think. And like, you know, in the comics, she has long hair. It's something.
That's Julia
stupid.
Garner, right?
No, yes. So
Julia, yeah.
Ashalabal.
Sure.
Yeah, but she. I think she looks great. I think it's fun. I hope we see more of the Silver Surfers in general. It's crazy. Galactus is crazy. Him being on Earth is crazy. I don't know that. I didn't know we're gonna go like that quick.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if they're showing us that now. The fact, like, God knows what's waiting for us in the movie.
Yeah.
Because that's usually payoff. They don't show that until the very end of promotions, you know?
Yeah.
But they're just like, here you go, first trailer, Galactus.
Bang.
Yeah, so...
I mean,
like,
we just see his feet. We haven't seen his full...
His full, yeah.
You know,
full,
that mantle, voice, head.
That voice is going to shatter eardrums. I can't wait.
I think so, yes. Maybe they won't even, like... Show his voice until the premiere.
Oh, it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
But before then, Thunderbolts finally drops this week, so please go out and support the ragtime team of anti-heroes we love so much. Jeff and I will be attending the fan event on Thursday, so be sure to subscribe and tune in to our next episode,
yes,
where we're going to discuss the film chock full of spoilers. And so while we're talking about Thunderbolts, you know me, this is where we start to get... The promo stuff is reaching for my wallet.
I've heard good things.
Oh, I've heard nothing but great things.
Yeah, the early reviews.
Yeah. It started really strong, too. It was like a 95% or something.
It's like certified fresh, right?
Yeah. And then it dropped to 88 earlier today. It might be up, but I think that's pretty...
Still pretty good.
Pretty strong, yeah. And people saying that this is the movie that... They enjoyed this movie as much as they did older films, mm-hmm, if you will, and... On par with Guardians Volume 3. And I'm like, ooh, that's a big one. So I'm like, okay. But as thankfully, hopefully expected and anticipated, Wheaties is indeed releasing an official Thunderbolts cereal box.
How much is that box?
$20, Jeff.
Sure.
But you know what's the messed up part?
Oh.
There's no cereal.
There's no cereal?
At least with Amazing Spider-Man. No, sorry, not Amazing. Sony Spider-Man.
Yes.
And with Loki charms,
yes,
you
there was
got
cereal.
The cereal. There's no cereal in this box.
I mean, for what it's worth.
I'm like,
who eats Wheaties?
But you saw the mini box
there,
that I made.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks to Sebastian Stan Brazil. They uploaded an amazing template. We shared it on our social media, the videos on YouTube, as well as all of our channels, and you can learn to make your own. It's pretty easy. It takes 10 minutes. You just got to cut and fold a lot. But I was like, not bad. But yeah, $20 plus, Jeff, $13 shipping.
What? For no cereal?
For no cereal. So I will probably not have succeeded because there's only 1,000.
Of course.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one.
Of course.
Loki, immediately. So... we'll see, but I might try. You know me. But as far as other promotions go, I got the special Regal thing in the mail. And so it's the collector medallion thing that every Marvel movie releases.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and of course it's the Asterix, which we will know what it stands for.
At the end of the movie or something.
Apparently at the end of the movie or... this week.
Sure.
We'll know by the time this episode drops. And it came with this amazing poster of the gang.
Oh, that's sick.
Isn't that sick?
Yes.
I was like, character posters? These are so good.
Yeah.
And just the treatment is great. All 6 Thunderbolts. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I don't think I'm going to get anything beyond the fan event. Like, I think that's the favorite grab.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, when you showed me the gift for the fan event, I was like, oh no, I like it. And usually usually from in past it's just been a Funko Pop in the bucket,
yeah, which is Friday.
Yeah. And then the one that we got, I was like, oh, what's even, and the last one we saw, oh my God, Captain America, was the shaving cream and the razor.
Yeah.
And I was and a Funko Pop still, but I was also just like, well,
yeah, it's nothing you really want.
I don't really have any facial.
But the Thunderbolt.
And then you showed me the. And yeah. I wasn't expecting anything for Thunderbolts. I was thinking, okay, yeah, another sure. whatever yeah. Funko Pop for me to store in a bucket.
Sleek ass tote bag.
Yeah, and I was like, oh no,
it's good.
I'm gonna use it.
I know.
The next day.
It's really, really good.
So
sorry, Cass.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so it's amazing. I can't wait to get it. We'll have it by the time this episode drops, but very much looking forward to it. But yeah, stick with us. We'll be talking about the film next episode. Even Marvel Gaming has jumped in on the action. So this is obviously one of the smarter marketing strategies that Marvel has adopted in recent years, is that they'll start dropping skins onto all their platforms. So not only can you get Yelena and Bucky on Fortnite, but you can get all of them on Marvel, what is it?
Rivals.
Rivals.
So
and
smart.
Then, yeah, it's
so
like all,
smart.
It's so, so smart. I love it. I love it. Not getting any of it. Maybe just the Bucky one.
I haven't played enough. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't played Rivals in forever, but that's thanks to the toxic community.
Sure.
Thanks, gamers. So yeah, none for me. But speaking of Fantastic Four, as we go back that way, I am predicting that tickets will be on sale early June for the film.
Because it comes out end of July, mid-July?
Mid-July, so, during Comic-Con weekend.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it'll go...
Oh my God, that's right.
I know.
Oh my God.
I have a lot of pressure from multiple people like, so are we going to go watch this movie? And I'm like, Comic-Con?
So you're going to be at Comic-Con on Thursday already.
But yeah, I think that the tickets will drop mid-June.
That's fair.
Yeah, and it'll be a good month out. I don't think they were too worried about sales, but it is going to be up against Superman and Jurassic World. So
that's a banger month.
Yeah, it's one after another. So I wonder how that's going to go. But only one can have an IMAX screen at a time, right? So if they're all... Oof. Are they only going to be in theaters on IMAX?
I don't know, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's coming up quick, but here we are. Finally, Thunderbolts and then Fantastic Four. All that said, let's dive into this episode's character study. But first, a reminder, we are not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're nerding out over...
Kingpin.
Vanessa.
not yet, but we will. And so if you wanted to catch up on related episodes, check out episode 37, Daredevil, 107, Mini Marvel, number 17, and 105, Daredevil, Born Again, season 1.
Born Again!
Mixture. Fisk, Adam Warlock. And so, created by Stan the Man Lee and Johnny Ring-a-Ding Romita. That is
Is that real?
That's really, wow. It's really in the comic book, which I love.
Hell yeah.
Ring-a-ding. Romita, yeah, so John Romita, the king, one of my kings. First appearance, The Amazing Spider-Man, number 50, July 1967.
Okay.
So, Jeff.
Wow. No, not another Price guess.
But the issue itself is going to surprise you because does this look familiar? What does it say?
The Spider-Man No More.
You know this story.
Wait, hold on. Where is this image from?
You know it.
Dude.
Think about your Marvel MCU.
What move?
Spider-Man.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was in No Way Home.
Well, that too, but it was in a Tobey Maguire film as well.
Oh,
it was
God.
The premise of the second film.
Second film, yes, yeah. Where he couldn't, his powers, he threw mm-hmm. he threw it away, right?
Yeah, so they used a lot of iconic imagery from this book. And one of the biggest ones we'll look at in shortly, but do you want to take a crack at a cover
at the price?
Yeah.
Of a 1961 banger?
1967.
Seven?
Key issue, first appearance of Wilson Fisk, origin of Spider-Man retold. Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon cameos. Of all people.
Dude, I want to say 12.
Did I cover the wrong part? Yes, it's 12.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
You got it.
I didn't see it. Yes.
Yes, the 12.
I'm on a roll, guys.
This is a 6.5. It was gifted to me.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yes, amazing, amazing friend, Vanessa, gave... Oh, yeah. Speaking of, Vanessa. Gifted that to me some years ago, knowing that it was going to be one of my favorite
comics ever. I can see but the age in it.
You can really see it. So this is the panel.
That's
do you remember
the, that's
now?
What, yes, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
And
yes.
So it's the whole like, ha, word on the street is that Spider-Man has quit his job. And so it's that scene.
It's so good. I was like, oh my God. Is that J. Jonah Jameson in here? Yeah,
J.K. Simmons, thank you. Welcome to the show. Lovely to be here. And it's that classic scene of Tobey Maguire Spider-Man walking away from his suit discarded in the alley. And so this is the issue that Kingpin makes his debut. And so again, notable attributes are pretty obvious. Just mention them up top, but the highest grade that I found on Shortbox was an 8.0, listed at $2,750.
Wow.
On eBay, a CGC 9.4, big jump, listed at $23,000.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's crazy. Lowest graded short box CGC 1.0 listed at $350. So mind you, 1.0 to 350.
1.0 is crazy.
6.5. So 350 times 6 ish. Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
That's a big book. I was like, dude, I feel bad that she bought that for me, but love your friends.
Dude, that is crazy.
I know. And then eBay, a CGC 2.0 was listed at $250, last I checked. And fair market value for the book ranges between $1,800 to $2,600.
My God.
And so you can buy this rough. You can buy it raw, online, no plastic, nothing. Cheapest I found was going for about $85. It was super duper rough, probably a 1.0. Didn't take care of it, falling apart. There are other editions, like a Mexican edition, Germany. There are republishings and, you know, second editions, so definitely be careful if you're looking to buy.
Okay.
But yeah, what was your first exposure to Wilson Fiske?
Oh, it has to be
Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First Daredevil.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what was his name? Was it Michael Duncan?
Close. Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael Clark Duncan. Yeah. So I had to be him. Mm. I just remember him being so, I was like, oh my God, Ben Affleck's getting his butt kicked right now.
Yeah. Yep. That's a big one.
What about you?
Shockingly enough, I think I want to say the animated series for Spider-Man. I don't know if that's actually accurate.
Okay.
But I think he was in a few episodes from there. If not, definitely comics.
Uh-huh.
It definitely took me a while to realize that he was like a Spider-Man enemy, which we'll get into shortly. But first, I have my handy dandy mini book.
Yeah.
And so the bio for Kingpin reads, tormented in his youth, portly, Wilson Fisk added concealed muscle weight to his considerable mass in order to rise from scuffling street tough to the undisputed kingpin of crime in New York City, despite the efforts of heroes like Spider-Man and Daredevil to topple his underworld empire. Yeah.
No special, no telekinesis, no,
no
invincibility.
Nope, not at all.
Thank God.
Right? Right? That's the crazy thing. And so we'll actually get into that in a bit. But as far as his first appearance go, technically his first panel, you only see his back.
Damn, he's huge.
Let me, you know, that said, let me show you this magnificent screenshot from another issue we're going to talk about. But I'm jumping ahead of myself here, but you may have seen this before. The Kingpin we saw in Into the Spider-Verse is very much based off of a comic book version because Bill Sienkiewicz, and I think we've said this before, Bill Sienkiewicz drew Wilson ginormous.
Yeah.
He is just a mass of a man an egghead, and he takes up the entire page, right? Yeah, and so it was the same, you know, as far as his appearance in Spider-Man went. And so we actually don't get to see his face and the name Kingpin until the next page, and he's sitting at his desk all good and everything. And so the book itself opens like any issue of Amazing Spider-Man would. And so Spidey's taking out criminals. He's stressing out about the girls. He's moved out. He lives with Harry now. And so Aunt May is by herself. And so Aunt May, we have to talk about Aunt May one day because my God.
Dude.
But she's constantly having anxiety attacks because she is old and elderly, and she's constantly worried about her dear nephew. And so, oh, Peter, you know, constantly. And so it all leaves Pete with this sort of like guilt that, you know, is obviously written about. To this day, he goes through the same cycle. This is what Spider-Man is about.
Yes.
Great power, great responsibility.
Sure, blah, whatever. Blah,
you know. So what ultimately pushes Pete over the edge is that the spicy news that JJ gives through the Daily Bugle, I think it was on a live newscast, and it leaves Pete thinking like, wait, am I doing this for the right reason, or am I just being a glory hungry fool? And so he starts to question the validity of his own heroism.
Uh-huh.
He thinks, you know, like, I don't have to do this, but I'm still doing it. Am I doing it for me or for people? And so it's then we're dealt that iconic image of him finally deciding, you know what? I'm going to focus on school. I'm going to focus on the girl.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on Aunt May. Spider-Man is done.
Damn.
Spider-Man no more. And so quite literally the next day, or what's presumed the next day, a small child runs in, and this is very familiar to you, Jeff, holding the suit, and is like, look what I found in the alley. And JJ's like, where'd you get that? And he's like, I found it in the alley. And he's like, yeah. Is that real? And he looks at the suit, and it's Spider-Man's suit. It's the authentic suit. And he's like, oh, he did it. He finally gave up. And that's what happens in Spider-Man 2, but it's like a trash guy or something, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what about a reward? And he's like, my kindness is my reward. Get out of here. You know, like whatever he says. But in the comic, he offers the kid like a free copy of the Bugle. And the kid is like, that's it? And he takes the suit and he frames it like he does in the movie. It's the same scenario.
Yeah.
And so the world, the city has to go on without Spider-Man. So naturally, as we've seen, similarly in Daredevil Born Again, crime rises.
Mm-hmm.
Things start to go down. But Pete, like in the movie, is like, well, not my problem. I'm no longer Spider-Man, you know? I got to do what I got to do. And so the news travels fast, and JJ himself is almost overwhelmed by it all. He goes on talk shows, hence the Johnny Carson and, you know, the Ed McMahon cameos. And it passes through multiple outlets and eventually arrives to the criminal underworld. And a particularly rotund man finally catches wind that, oh, Spider-Man has given up. So now is the time. And so the criminals begin to lobby. They start coming together. And Kingpin kind of almost immediately is like, I'm going to lead this. And
sure.
So it turns into a conflict of, okay, well, these guys don't want to join. But these guys do. And these guys want to fight those guys so that they join. On and on and on. And so Kingpin essentially takes the reins, and then a man named Frederick Foswell has these delusions of grandeur, and he's eavesdropping for all the tea because he wants to be the big guy. He's got, you know, ambitions like all these criminals do, right? And so the funny thing is, and I forgot that Foswell even existed, but he's one of those smarmy side characters that kind of is just there. JJ gave Foswell a job at the Bugle, even though he had been captured and put in jail by Spider-Man. So after the man is paroled, he's like, I need a job. And JJ's like, yeah, come here, work for the Bugle. And so Foswell is essentially operating like a double agent of sorts. So he's like trying to find out news for the publication, but he's also like, oh, how can I get an edge over, you know, whatever, for his own personal gain?
Yeah.
And so ever so conveniently, Pete notifies JJ that he's concentrating on school. He's not going to be photographing anymore since Spider-Man quit. And then Foswell is the person that starts to piece it together. I think in the movie they kind of alluded that maybe Betty Brant kind of caught on. Like,
okay.
Like she gave a look or something like, oh, that's coincidental. And so in the book, it's Foswell. He realizes, he's like, oh, Peter Parker is quitting the same time that Spider-Man is no longer saving the city. That's interesting. And yeah, suspicious. And so
vigilante.
Yeah, exactly. And then meanwhile, criminals are running amok across the city, like, you know, I mentioned. And so despite police intervention, they're still like, nobody is really making any leeway with them, and they're just taking over. And so Fisk finally shows his hand, and then we see this first panel. Oh my god, his sausage fingers. And so, you know, I don't know if you want to read this. Do you want to read it in your Vincent D'Onofrio voice?
This means the time has come to proceed with my master plan. Instead of many rival gangs operating haphazardly throughout the city, instead of countless crooks acting alone without a chance to get against the police, the underworld will be run like a business, and the chairman of the board will be the Kingpin.
Well done.
Yeah. God, my voice hurts. Oh, God.
Right? How does he do? He's such a brilliant.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know. He's such a brilliant character actor. But yeah, so this is the moment that he finally steps into the spotlight, and he's like, this is mine. I'm doing it. And so it's pages on, and Pete literally has this gigantic inner monologue. And it retells, like, you know, I mentioned on the synopsis, he essentially retells his origin story in like 5 pages, and all the way from like the wrestling to Uncle Ben and all that, how he got to this point and then quit. And then after all of that, we're brought back to Foswell approaching the Kingpin, and he's like trying to negotiate with him, like trying to be like his right hand man or like his equal. And oh man, it does not work. And Fisk does not take to it very kindly. He obliterates Foswell's gun. So he has this gun and he's pointing it, and Kingpin pulls out this cane. He was notorious for carrying a cane. He does, I think he had it in Into the Spider-Verse or something.
Yes. Did he have it in Echo too?
I feel like he had it in Echo. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think you're right. And so in the comics, he has this cane and it can shoot like laser beams. And so he shoots the gun.
God.
Yeah, Jeff is like, nah. He shoots the gun and then it disintegrates this weapon. And then he commands one of his men to put Foswell, quote unquote, on ice until they need him later. So they don't kill him, but they definitely put him away. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, you're out of our hair.
Of course.
And so, alas, by the end of the issue, and after saving an old police guard that reminded him of Uncle Ben. So Pete's run, he's like, hears the scream and he sees the people up top, saves the old man.
Yeah.
The guy looks at him sideways, not like in a bad way, but he looks at him. And Pete is immediately recollected of, you know, he recalls Uncle Ben and why he took on the mantle of Spider-Man. So it reassured him like, oh, I'm not doing this because I like the fame and the glory. I'm doing this because I couldn't save Uncle Ben. And so he reclaims the suit. Like, do you remember in the movie how he just like comes in through the window and then like the suit's there and the next second it's gone?
Yes.
And it's that scene. It's the same thing. And so Pete comes in through the window. And he's like, I gotta go fast so that no one sees. And he gets into the suit. And just as like JJ's opening the door, Spider-Man is sitting in a chair and he's like, hi, JJ, guess who's back? And he's like, no!
No, Spider-Man!
Exactly. And so while that, so all of that, that concludes the first appearance of Wilson Fisk in comic continuity. And so that's just the first appearance itself. And so he gets more action in the subsequent issue. So it's like I want to say it's a 3 or 4 story arc, for Kingpin and his introduction. And it unfolds, he unfolds into one of Spider-Man's most formidable adversaries. And then we'll talk about how he comes into the other aspects of New York, as we go along here. But first, speaking of the big man, Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, portrayed first by John Rhys Davies in 1989's The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. We've talked about this a few times already. We got to have like a classic Marvel episode or something. Like that movie, Generation X movie, the old Fantastic Four movie,
oh my gosh.
Captain America.
Yeah.
Oh my, and Spider-Man. Like, that'd be amazing.
That's right.
Yeah. And then he was portrayed by Michael Clark Duncan in 2003's Daredevil film, directed by Mark Steven Johnson. And most prominently and recently portrayed by Vincent D'Onofrio as of 2015's Daredevil season 1, with Cole Jensen playing Wilson as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So another one that's like, holy crap. He's been here for 10 years already.
Oh my God.
As the Kingpin. Yeah. So wild.
Wow.
So Fisk made his first appearance in Netflix's original Daredevil series, season 1, episode 4, titled In the Blood, but was not referred to as Kingpin until the end of the third season, which is essentially the Netflix tenure, which is kind of crazy to think about. And so, yeah.
It's like when a superhero doesn't get their suit
right
until like the end of
the
movie.
Glow up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get his glow up until that very last second, which is kind of interesting if you think about
That's
it,
funny.
Because like mentally you're thinking Kingpin.
That's Kingpin.
Right?
Yeah.
But they never say it. They say Fisk all the way until that last season. It's like, oh, wow, actually.
And then they canceled.
And then they canceled it. Yeah, how dare they? I beat you! he's essentially a businessman and a crime lord who seeks to overtake the city by various means and alliances. And you know what is interesting? In review of this all, I was like, oh yeah, this is Netflix. You have to remember Netflix was the time when they couldn't directly mention the Marvel connection, right? They had to keep it segregated.
Because of rights.
Right.
And whatever.
For the rights. And so his rise of opportunity was because of the Battle of New York. And that's where the reference came from, right? Because they were referring to it as the Battle of New York.
Of New York. We have an opportunity.
Bless you.
The city's vulnerable. And we have to take it.
You know what's funny is that I can see, similarly to Vincent D'Onofrio, it changes the way you like.
Yeah, like it changes
your posture,
like
your presence changes.
Yeah, like your mannerisms.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the battle, I think the phrase Battle of New York was derived because of Netflix, right? Because they couldn't call it the Chitauri invasion.
Invasion, yes.
So it just kind of ran with it.
That's
and I
funny.
Remember seeing it like it was a newspaper. And it was like, not
Battle
the Daily
of New
Bugle.
York.
Yeah.
Or aliens invade New York.
Yeah. And so he used that opportunity to build his empire because the city itself was rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And as for Fisk, you know, much like his namesake, he's the centralized kingpin. So the kingpin itself is a part of a mechanism that kind of goes in the middle of everything. It makes everything operate.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of, he lives up to that namesake. He makes the connections. He plays his cards tactfully. And he leaves lasting effects on anything and everyone that he touches. And such is the case with Eleanor Bishop and her deceased husband, who accrued massive debt through the loans with Fisk. So she was kind of like one of the early stepping stones because her husband owed the money.
Yeah.
So he's like, your husband had a debt needed to be repaid.
I've paid that debt.
Yeah. And so that's kind of like, I don't want to say it's the origin of his crime, right?
This is why you don't take loans from crime lords, bro. What are we doing here?
I know, exactly. Parasite is literally built off of that entire storyline.
What are we talking about?
Loan sharks are bad. Yeah, and so it's interesting that, yeah, they, if looking back on it, even though sequentially it was not in timeline order,
yeah,
but to look back on that after we have met Fisk the Kingpin, and that Eleanor Bishop, of all people, is one of his first, like, among his first pool of clientele into the, like, underworld, is, like, crazy.
Love that tie-in, man. Love yeah, that tie-in.
It's so good. I almost forgot. I was like, that's right.
I'll never forget, like, the, we can talk about, like, that appearance later, but I'll never forget, like, the hype of, like, oh my God, is the Kingpin coming back into the MCU? Yeah. Like, are we going to see Vincent D'Onofrio?
It was huge. And it also kind of laid the foundation again that, oh, maybe we can get
Charlie Cox back. Like, I'll never forget the ending to that episode, mm-hmm. where Clint is like, he's like, who's that? I was like, wait, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And then Kate's like, who is that? That's the Kingpin. And you're like,
the screams. That's why I'm like, you know what? I will always protect Hawkeye. And I will always defend Hawkeye, because it's so underrated. But it's like story plot lines like that. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
It made it so worthwhile. So good. And not because it was like, oh, someone's making a cameo. It's like, no, because the actual connection.
Yeah, like, you never thought that's possible.
Genius. So good.
It's so, like, it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's that very criminal activity that undoubtedly put him on Daredevil's radar. And then the complicated relationship between Fisk and Matt Murdock, as well as Fisk and Daredevil, only escalated from there. So it's very interesting, because it's almost like an organic feud, that it wasn't because he killed his father like he did, like, in the movie, sure. But it's like, that's not the plot point. Is that Daredevil was being a hero. Fisk is a bad guy.
Yes.
And good guys take care of the bad guys.
Yes.
And so Fisk is also the purest example of generational trauma.
That
episode is, I think, still one of the most brutal of any of those shows, that of the street level heroes.
Like,
the flashback stories for Wilson are for Fisk are so,
it's so dark.
So dark, and so emotionally charged. And they picked a really great kid in Cole Jensen to portray what would inevitably grow up to be Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin. And so upon reading and reviewing the timeline, it kind of puts things into perspective too. Like, if you actually put it in chronological order, so Fisk grows up in an abusive household and then murders his father.
Sure.
He grows up with a nurturing, protective mother. He's then sent away for a bit and then comes back after he visits family and journeys abroad. And then somewhere down the line, he meets Crazy Horse, aka Maya's father, and then by that point he's obviously and so clearly seated in the crime circuit as a powerful figurehead, continues to grow and slip further into the power struggle of crime after the Battle of New York with his company, Union Allied Construction, and then he gets the wealth, he's more and more wealthy, more and more rich, meets Vanessa, loses his mind.
Yep.
And he's in love with her. And then finally, Daredevil is the one path that leads to everything we now know about this character, which is so wild that we've already been in this much of a journey with him.
I know.
10 years. It's like, I know. What? That's some character development, if you ask me.
Yeah, like, that's probably like one of his characters now that is just him. Like, Vincent D'Onofrio is Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, he is it. And so before we go further, I wanted to share this fun fact that I found on Disney Wiki, not even Wikipedia.
Wow.
Disney Wiki. Yeah. I did not find it anywhere else, but Disney Wiki states Fisk is the second character from a Marvel television program to be integrated into a Marvel Studios project. And he is the first originating from a show not produced by Kevin Feige.
Not wow.
Yeah, that's huge.
Wait, so who's
Because it was...
the first character from a... Because
it was Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb produced the Netflix series, so...
But he's the second character from a Marvel television program.
To be integrated into Marvel Studios.
Who's the first?
That, I'm not sure.
Boy, from a Marvel... When they say Marvel television program, like, how far is it? Is that dating back?
Yeah, because, like, Charlie Cox didn't come until later, so...
Exactly. So a Marvel Studios project. Yeah. So an MCU project.
Yeah.
So who's the first? Coulson's the opposite.
Yeah.
Movie to television.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Wait.
And they didn't reveal who. So if you
reveal?
No, they just
what
say
the
that.
Why would you give that fact without stating who's number one? Whatever. We'll sit on it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Yeah, now I'm intrigued. Now that you've mentioned that, I am
the first?
Well, actually, you know what? Interesting. So
you saw, you know it.
You weren't completely wrong because apparently it was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The show in its entirety because by season three, we've mentioned this before, when the Winter Soldier hit, they full on integrated the events and did a concurrent episode to the film.
Yes.
That S.H.I.E.L.D. was falling.
Yes.
So that's technically.
Wait,
all
really?
Those, apparently, technically, all
Agents
those characters.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came out after the first Avengers. It did.
It did. Winter Soldier.
Yes. But like so technically, if it was Coulson.
Mm-hmm. Not Coulson.
It's not Coulson.
Oh, but you have a great point.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if there was a person on the show.
It's like reverse osmosis.
Yeah. So it's like Coulson was in the movie.
Sure.
This is a humongous side tangent. This is staying in. If Coulson is going from the movies.
Yeah.
And then that's movie from television show. So there's somebody from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Coulson.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about Kobe Smulders, mm-hmm. Agent Hill, and we're not talking about Samuel L. Jackson, who just had that one cameo.
I guess they're talking about the other
They're
agents,
talking about...
Yeah.
But who?
But they haven't technically, like, incorporating the elements of the show by name, I guess. Incorporating the
events. So what character are they talking about from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, that's the thing. It just says Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's curious.
It's not Daisy. It's not Ward. It's not, right? It's not the two, the couple. It's not Ghost Rider.
That's interesting. I don't know if I believe that. Internet is lying.
I watched that show religiously, too.
We got to talk about those folks, too.
All right.
So, from there.
Yes.
You ready for a pop quiz?
Oh, my God.
This is a fun one.
Sure.
It's a fun one. So, speaking of Michael Clark Duncan. How much did Michael Clark Duncan weigh during his...
What?
During his time as Kingpin in the 2003 film. Was it? Multiple choice.
Sure.
Was it A, 230 pounds?
Okay.
B, 290 pounds?
Okay.
C, 330 pounds?
Mm.
Or D, 350 pounds?
Okay.
Michael Clark Duncan was a large
man. He's already a large fella.
Yeah.
What was that movie that he was? Was it Green Mile?
Yeah.
That he's in?
Yeah.
Like, I already know he's like a big, like, he's like almost like a, like Terry Crews size, maybe even bigger than Terry Crews size,
exactly.
like when he's like strong and muscular.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming for Kingpin he had to gain weight.
And he's 1 inch taller than Vincent D'Onofrio.
Ugh.
So he was 6'5".
I feel like D is too much. 390?
350, sorry.
That was D?
That was D.
And then C is
290. 230, 290, 330, 350.
Ooh. I feel like if you're pushing 350, that's already like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. I know it's not the first. I know it's not a...
Too light.
I literally just saw a clip.
He was big.
I just saw a clip from that movie.
Yeah.
It was when, I think it was at his penthouse, he threw Ben in the pool
into,
or something.
Yeah, into the wall and
in
showering.
The wall. Yeah, and he shatters.
Yeah, the water.
But I was like, and this is the time where they're wearing big suits.
Yeah.
So it's like, is he like fat under there or is he just like big?
Right. Is he actually muscular and
like, is he a muscular 350?
And then he took off the jacket because things got real. Yeah.
Like, I know it's not A, but was he a muscular 330? 320?
330.
Like, was he a muscle? I feel like you can be a muscular 350, but you're going to have a little bit of a some body fat on there.
Yeah.
290, like, I feel like you can be beefed up a little bit while still being a little bit muscular, lean.
Yeah.
Man, but he's a big guy. He's 6'5".
Yeah.
So if you're just 6'5", mm-hmm. you can be easily like 250.
Right.
Without any like crazy.
Final answer.
I want to go 320.
330.
330.
Well, Jeff, that would be correct.
Yes. I know my muscles. I know my weights.
So via Wikipedia, when Duncan was cast, he weighed 290 pounds.
Okay.
And was asked to gain
beefed up
an additional 40 pounds for the role to fit Kingpin's physique, which is so insane to me. 40 pounds. I would love to lose 40 pounds.
That's what I'm saying.
Gaining 40 pounds. Holy.
I know.
So yeah, 330 is correct. He is a big man.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of big man, going to aesthetics. As you could see, dear friend, there is a very common denominator when it comes to all versions of the Kingpin. He is undeniably consistent because he is big, bald, and imposing. And funny enough, I don't know if this is far, 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 far beyond your time or how much of a film buff you are, but Fisk was based off of a classic actor by the name of Sidney Greenstreet, known okay. for his roles in many early 1900s films, including The Maltese Falcon and Casablanca. Have you seen Casablanca?
It's been a long time. Sidney what?
Sidney Greenstreet. Once you see him, you'll be like, oh yeah, you've seen him. And so in Casablanca, he's in a white tuxedo.
Yeah.
And so Fisk was based off of this actor and his roles. And he often played prominent men of some sort. And so you really can't miss him. And then once you realize, you will not unsee it. I definitely did. So last but not least, the lead costume designers for Daredevil, the movie, Netflix Daredevil, and Daredevil Born Again Season 1 were Michael Wilkinson, Stephanie Maslansky, and Emily Gunsher, respectively. Do you have a favorite Kingpin? I mean, is it obviously Vincent?
I think it might have to be Vincent. Yeah. I like the one in Into the Spider-Verse, but I also like the one from the game, the Insomniac game.
The one
game.
From the game is great, too. Yeah, we're going to talk about him for a little bit. But yeah, I think they're all great because they're all unique as they are identical.
Yes.
Because they all capture the essence of it, exactly. Which is fantastic. And so as far as powers and paraphernalia go, Jeff, time to celebrate because he has no powers.
Yes! Finally!
Despite this, however, Fisk does have a small handful of abilities, including peak human strength.
That's fine.
And being a master martial artist.
Sure.
So he knows sumo wrestling, judo, and hapkido.
That's fine. I'll take that.
Yeah. He's also a notable criminal genius with an indomitable will whose only weakness is loyalty to his wife, Vanessa.
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 He's otherwise displayed some insane strength, which we sort of tackled in our episode about Daredevil Born Again. And in the comics, he has been known to utilize a disintegrating beam shooting cane. So that's what I mentioned. That's what he has in the picture of the comic book version I showed up there. And so, yeah, it's exactly the same in the MCU. He doesn't have special powers. He's not superhuman in any way. Just a really strong guy that can apparently pull car doors off of vehicles and smash people with them.
Exactly.
and crush skulls. But that is neither here nor there. So as we veer into family, friends, and affiliations, he doesn't have friends. He has alliances. He's got connections. And so Fisk has his fair share of all of those things, just the same. Mother and father, would you believe, Jeff, that these two have never been identified in the comics? They don't have names at all. They're just mother and father. And it isn't until Daredevil Volume 2, Number 15, published in 2001, that we're finally introduced to Fisk's parents. So, introduced 1967.
Yes.
Don't get an origin story until 2001.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that's the magic of the not retcon, but they definitely add some spice to it. So, These are his parents.
Oh my God.
And they're yelling at each other.
Of course.
And you know, of course, this origin story, it fills in all the necessary gaps that you can imagine, many of which we see mirrored in the show. We spoke a bit about this in our Maya episode too, because the flashbacks are presented in between the two fighting. And so in this issue of Daredevil, you know, Echo and Daredevil are fighting because Fisk had set it up to make mm-hmm. it look like Daredevil murdered her father. And so those two were dating in the comics at the time, but it was Matt Murdock and Maya. And they didn't, she didn't know that he was Daredevil until after this fight happened.
Mm.
And so anyway, they, you know, Fisk dedicates, similar to what we said above, he came from a broken home in these, you know, interlaced panels of the comic. And so he was a big boy with big shoes to fill, and his parents didn't seem to love one another, much less their son. And so there's this really, it's kind of sad panel where it's a little Fisk, and he's a short, stout, tiny boy.
Uh-huh.
And he's reaching up for the handle in the fridge, and the bubbles say, "My mother gave me the name of two presidents. One of them was also a general. She said if I studied that I could be president too. Later, I decided she talked about presidents so much because their names and faces are on money. And money was something we didn't have."
Mm.
And so he was named Wilson Grant Fisk. Yeah, and it's all starts to come together, and you're like, okay, so this is where the trauma begins. And so after accepting, you know, as he grew, he accepted that his enemies were not specific people, but they were ideas, and they were conflict, horror, fear, and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
He then dedicates himself to becoming terrifying. He just wants to become a terrifying, imposing human being. And so rather than ridicule, he turns his obesity into intimidation. He keeps his head shaved after a lice infestation because he thought it made him scarier. It gave impact to his presence. And he was so scary that the kids would pay him lunch money for protection.
Wow.
He was that guy in school, you know? And so on his free time, instead of just outwardly doing what a kid his age would do, he instead educates himself, quote unquote, just enough to get him into trouble. So he would learn the ropes of, like, what could he get away with?
Yeah.
What would be the reprimand of his actions? And, you know, familiar to some, Fisk murdered his father at the tender age of 12.
Jeez.
Yeah, so the issue is very telling and ingenious in that it really gives you a sense of why the whos and whys of Wilson Fisk. And so as for his parents in the MCU, officially, William and Marlene Vistain Fisk, portrayed by Dominic Lombardozzi and Angela Reid, as well as Phyllis Somerville as an older woman. So pretty much the same here,
mm-hmm.
but I think we got to see more in the episodes, even though it was only like 1.3 episodes.
Oh, okay.
I feel like we got a lot more
yeah.
from that and the dynamic because, you know, the father was drunk and he was abusive and all that stuff. And it was definitely more graphic because I'm happy to be wrong. I don't believe they actually show you the murder. They definitely don't show you in that issue. They don't show you Fisk murdering his father. There are implications.
Got it.
But it comes later. And the show, they very much went there. It's just, anything hitting a head, I'm like, bleh. And so that hammer going into his father's head was just not my cup of tea. We also got to see Marlene in her elderly years before she went to Italy for her protection. And I'll be honest, I forgot this whole thing happened. And that Karen Page and Ben Urich were trying to find the
yes.
mom, right? They were like, what's this guy's story? What is he trying to cover up? He must have somebody that we can get to get the information. And so Karen Page like found his mom.
Damn.
And and she was like in a retirement. Did you make it that far? I don't know if you made it that far.
Maybe. I mean, I just don't remember.
Yeah, I didn't remember until this like unlocked the core memory. But yeah, it's wild. And also how protective he was of his mother, because she protected him as a child. And so she's apparently still out there in the ether. She might be dead now. Maybe she got blipped and came back.
Possibly.
But we last saw her, she was alive. She's probably passed away by now. But yeah. As for children, yes, there are children. Fisk in the comics adopted two daughters. One was Maya Lopez Echo, who we're familiar with, as well as a character named Princess Fisk. So very quickly.
Oh, gosh.
Very quickly. Her name is literally Princess Fisk. She debuted in the fantastically fanatical pages of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
Wow.
She was in four issues of this comic. And there was no major details about her other than her father was a two-bit criminal, according to Fisk. And Fisk knew the mother. So after they both passed away, he was like, let me take care of her. Very similar to Maya. She went to the same school as Lunella and, you know, basically the Kingpin's daughter, and she got her way a lot. She eventually decided to go back to her own city, and I think they pretty much retconned that story.
Okay.
No MCU counterpart, yeah. But of course, there is Maya Lopez, aka Echo, and we discussed all things Echo in episode 73 of the podcast. So Fisk was deeply rooted in Maya's life. We've chatted about it earlier in this episode, as well as in, you know, previous episodes, but he met her father, William Crazy Horse Lopez, when Fisk was 19. So this is 7 years after he killed his father.
Jeez.
He got in with Crazy Horse and their circuit of, you know, the crime lords. and so William was also Fisk's first human friend, because there's this whole storyline about how when Fisk was growing up, he befriended a stray mouse he found.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Ben scenario, like the Michael Jackson song. But yeah, Crazy Horse was his first true friend. And so after he unfortunately also killed Crazy Horse, he then adopted Maya, like we all know. And then, yeah, he raised her. He essentially raised her since she was 9 years old. And they had a lot in common from the get-go. They were on the same path of this very grayish area.
Sure.
And then, yeah, he framed Daredevil for killing her father. But that was obviously not true. And, I don't think she ever quite forgave him for any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of made her into an anti-hero in a way.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. And the same goes for Maya Lopez and Echo in the MCU, portrayed by Alacqua Cox and Darnell Bisaw as a child. First seen in Hawkeye, 2021. Last seen in Echo series, directed by Sydney Freeland and Catriona McKenzie. So yeah, it's pretty, as far as the simplified version is, pretty simple, pretty similar. She was co-raised by the Kingpin. She knew him as uncle.
Yeah.
And then in her series, you know, he almost tried to reform. Way,
yeah,
yeah, like she definitely was positioned as like she's the baddie because of Hawkeye,
yes,
and she that fruit didn't fall far from the tree, yes. Scenario. But yeah, you know, she eventually took him down after all was said and done. It was funny because it's like he was just kind of trying to chase her to bring her back, Maya. trying to bring her back, right?
Yeah, pretty much
bring back to her. It's interesting, all these women he's got. He's obviously got a mommy issues because they're all women that he's fiercely loyal to. And Maya is one of them. And so, yeah, at the end of that series, she used her power to cleanse him, which is interesting to think about in retrospect because it clearly didn't work.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he just somersaulted into running for mayor at the end of that series. He running for mayor.
Pretty much.
And then it's like, oh, he's not even doing it for the right reasons. He's doing it for his money.
Exactly.
And power. And beyond daughters, Fisk has two biological sons in the comics, being Richard and Butch. And so just going to try and move through this pretty quickly. But Richard Fisk, also known as the Rose, his actual biological son with Vanessa. So we've never been introduced to this character in the MCU. But he has a pretty loaded backstory. And the wild thing of all and the thing to take away is that Richard grew up believing his father was a good man, that he was respected and honorable. So they really shielded this kid away from all the truths. And he didn't learn about it until he was in college. And Richard decided to die by suicide. But the truth is, he made it look like he killed himself. And he decided to take on a new persona. And so he became this rising villain known as the Schemer, because he wanted to then dethrone his father. The audacity, right? It's like, oh, I thought my dad was good. Actually, I'm going to dethrone him and become the crime lord. And then, of all people, Ned Leeds.
Wow.
as the Hobgoblin brought him back into the criminal lifestyle, and then he became known as the Rose. He dropped the Schemer, became the Rose. And then, Richard tried to kill his father at one point, almost succeeded, and then Vanessa found out. So instead, Vanessa sought out her son and killed him.
Oh my gosh.
She killed her own child for
him. That's crazy.
Yeah. And, but per usual, one of your favorite attributes, Jeff, he's resurrected at some point and he's still alive in continuity.
They always are.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, there's no MCU counterpart, but Richard does appear in Sony's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in a series of multiversal time jumps and flashbacks along with Vanessa. And there's no actor credited for the role. So we've actually kind of seen him, as for the other son, there's Byron Butch Fisk, a.k.a. known as the Kingpin also. He's an illegitimate son that Fisk had with a woman named Stella Ferris, who was, surprise, the neighbor of the Murdochs.
Wow.
Can't imagine why he did that. And so beyond all that, Butch was introduced amidst what is regarded as this mystical rewrite. Jeff, you would hate it. I hated it. A lot of Daredevil fans hated it. But basically, there was this bit of Daredevil lore where this character named Mike Murdock became the fictional canonical twin of Matt Murdock. It's like you can't leave good things alone. You got to throw some stupid.
Yes, of course. You need to spice things up.
Yeah, so they brought him into the actual canon and. They kind of paired up, and then Butch grew up on the wrong side of the law, and then Mike Murdock gets killed by the Kingpin. Yeah, this whole thing, I did not care for it. And so anyway, he grew up on the wrong side of the law, became henchman, scammer, gang member, and then he was boss of the Hell's Kitchen for a while. Other than that, you don't hear too much about this kid. It's kind of my dad's the Kingpin. You know, that's
you
it.
Can't touch me.
Yeah, that's all he's gotten, and Kingpin's like, who? He doesn't acknowledge him. No MCU counterpart. No reason. So as for friends, we do have James Wesley. Kind of a minor character in the comics, but he bears the same purpose. He's a lawyer in the books and is quite a formidable force despite his unassuming nature thanks to his loyalty and guidance from Fisk. He's the guy you don't assume. He's the guy that's quiet and you're just like, oh, it's always the quiet ones, right?
Yeah.
And he even served as mayoral chief of staff when Fisk was mayor in the comics. Mm. Not much else to say about Wesley other than he's done some pretty bad things for Fisk. Whereas in live action and in the MCU, he was portrayed first by Leland Orser in 2000's Daredevil film, then portrayed by Toby Leonard Moore in the Daredevil Netflix series. So let it be known that despite being referred to as Wesley Owen Welch in the movie, the character goes by that alias in the comics as well. Regardless, his real name is indeed James Wesley. That's why they just call him Wesley. Because everybody changes his name. Wesley, yes.
Sure.
Right, not wrong.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And again, he's essentially Fisk's right man. It's definitely more of an idea and concept in live action. Unassuming, very cool, very calm, very collected, faithful assistant. And in the film, he was quite a bit different than his comic book canon and almost hesitant to be part of Fisk's ring. So it's even noted that Cinematic Wesley didn't want to be part of any of it and that he was the reason why Fisk got taken down in the end. So speaking to what you just mentioned, that he threw Daredevil against the wall and the water started going everywhere. And so after that fight, and what does Fisk say? He's like, you won't stop me. I'll get you or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you start to hear the cops are coming and the helicopter and Daredevil's like, oh, they're here. They're coming to get you. Everyone knows. In the director's cut, they reveal it's because Wesley he was the whistleblower.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's uncovered. And so they kind of cut it out. So unless you watch the director's cut,
that's
you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
It's a nice little twist. So he was a little bit of a better guy in the movie, but in the MCU, oh my, he was faithful as he was dangerous and deadly. And he was like the hitman. He would kill people for Fisk and even took Karen Page hostage, to which led to his inevitable death when she shot him like 7 times in the chest.
Jeez.
One of her best moments. I don't know if you remember that.
But yeah.
Man, when she pulled the trigger and it actually went off and she just went pa, 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 pa.
Yeah.
And then tells him, I killed your friend. And the only reason I shot him 7 times was because I ran out of bullets. I was like, Karen.
Yes, sir.
Very amazing.
People asking, what's Karen going to do when in Secret Wars? I was like, yo, she got a Glock and she got 7 bullets.
She's Spider-Man 2's Mary Jane OP.
That's all she needs.
That's so crazy. The redheads are crazy. Yeah. And then so we lost Wesley, but another man stepped into the role for Born Again specifically. And in the comics, he is known as Bush Cashman, a.k.a. Bullet. Mm-hmm. And so in the comics, not much known about him as well. He was a covert U.S. agent, later assigned to U.S. Army General by Fisk. And he participated in a bunch of Fisk's crimes. So he was drinking that Kool-Aid. He was all about it. He was like, you know what? I'm reformed. I know what to do. I know how to kill people. Let's go. And so beyond being the classic agent gone assassin type, Buck was interesting. He has an interesting comic lore. Intersecting with multiple groups within the Marvel Universe. Even, this is so crazy. He even bonded with a symbiote at one point called Phage.
Oh my gosh.
So it was like the scenario that Venom was summoning all of the symbiotes to join. He was summoning the Hive to come together. And Bush didn't know that his dog was carrying the symbiote. He was host for the symbiote.
Yeah.
And the minute it had the opportunity and was summoned by Venom, it killed Bush. It killed Buck. I was going to call him Bushman.
I mean, that's fine. Yeah. I get it.
Ship name. So it killed Buck and took him on as the host for Phage. But otherwise, he possesses skills that seem supernatural, whether or not he was born with them, however, or if they're artificial, no one knows. He looks quite different in the comics, too. He was like heavier build.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah, looks like a menacing type. But in the end, MCU, oh my goodness, Buck Cashman, portrayed by Artie Frauschen in Daredevil Born Again. That was his first and last appearance so far, but he's clearly coming back, and he is basically the new, even deadlier Wesley. And so he uses his influence and quote unquote asymmetrical way of thinking to guide Fisk into making decisions as mayor, handling business like a boss. And little is known about Cashman's past beyond the fact that he's clearly an expert marksman. We could theorize he's probably something similar to Conk Buchanan. So he's probably part of MI6.
Mm.
And then he decided, you know what? I'd like money more. I'm going to be a killer. And then started working for Fisk. I liked his presence because I wasn't very familiar with the comic book version.
Okay.
And so I didn't know the scope of like his part in Fisk's life. And so the way they framed it in the show, I thought was so genius because I was like, there's no way this guy is like another Wesley. Like he's not going to kill people for him. And then he killed Luca.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, he is another. And then I was like, oh, he's Buck Cashman. Oh, shoot.
I was like, here we go.
Right. Because he was subtle about the name. But yeah, he definitely rose. And it was interesting in the last episode. It left him in a kind of ambiguous state. Because the last time they show him on screen, he was watching as Heather was essentially getting indoctrinated as her new role under Fisk, right? What was it? Mental health, whatever. And Cashman looked interesting, and he just kind of looks at his gun, and you're just like, what are you thinking there, buddy? What's going on in that head? Are you gonna, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
So I'm curious where they take him in the next season, especially if Bullseye is in the mix again, and if he's going for Fisk, like, how are they gonna all intersect?
Yeah.
And Bullseye is gonna be kind of good for a minute, but nah, I don't trust him. So where's that all gonna, what's gonna happen there? Very interested. What else is interesting? Our Fisk's love interest.
Should just be one.
It should
Why
just
is
be
there
one.
Multiple?
I only put this other one because it is an interesting twist of modern canon. And so the first one on this list is Mary Walker, a.k.a. Typhoid Mary. And so we ever so subtly and briefly talked about Typhoid during our Daredevil character episode. And so she's pretty complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's based on Mary Mallow. She was known as Typhoid Mary in history. She was known for poisoning people and killing them. And yeah, she was interesting. fun story. But the Mary Walker in the comics, she suffers from terrible mental illness as well. And so she's got DID, dissociative identity disorder, like our pal Moon Knight.
Yes.
But it's a lot worse. Ah. So it's not like a Steven, no. No, like she's not one of those situations. It's more like she's the kind of scary psychotic that you see in movies where there's a change in the eyes and it's another person, yeah, and she's okay. Gone. And she's a psychopath. She loves to kill. But being that Wilson is more than a wanted man for many a crime, in the comics, he married Typhoid, who is obviously a recurring ally of sorts, and also conveniently a mutant.
Of course.
He married her so he could seek refuge on the mutant nation of Krakoa.
That's funny.
In modern comics. Wow. Yeah, and so he has this... is this... I'm not even sure if this is from that particular era of comics, because they were infamous for... profile. Oh, yes, it is. It's from Krakoa. So there's this fancy grid, and he had an arrest warrant.
Wow.
Made, and so it identifies everything. You might like those aliases on there, buddy.
Let me see.
But yeah, so Fisk basically wanted access to the island so that it was basically Swiss, right? So he can't be taken in for his crimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Stay puffed. Is one of his aliases.
Harold Howard. The Wilbur.
Wilbur.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. It's great, right? Yeah. So it's Jonathan Hickman has a thing for maps and things of this nature. Pretty awesome. So Mary Walker. She does exist in live action. She was portrayed by Natasha Melth in 2005's Elektra film, directed by Rob Bowman. We talked about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. She had the crazy hair.
Yes.
But, and I'll be honest, I forgot about this. I put in our notes, hot damn, I forgot about her. She was most recently portrayed by Alice Eve in 2017's Iron Fist Season 2. Alice Eve is huge in sci-fi. And so the fact that she got to portray this character and then it went nowhere is actually embarrassing.
Wow.
But she was there. She was known as Mary. And so they didn't call... I don't think they call her Typhoid Mary in the series, but she was known as Mary Walker. And so there was no crossover at all. And the portrayal of Elektra was obviously a far cry, but that would be if they were going to bring back anybody, that would be a very, very interesting pull. Like, and then bring her into the, not even Kingpin, but in the fray of street level.
Yeah.
That would be very, very interesting to me. I don't know. I don't know if they'll ever do it, but man, Alice Eve, man, you don't sleep on Alice Eve. And so for the one that Jeff believes should be the only one on the list, and I agree, Vanessa Mariana Fisk.
Vanessa.
Vanessa. Oh boy. So right off the top, just FYI. Full transparency, Vanessa met Fisk when she was 15 years old.
Damn.
So she was initially brought to him as like an offering.
Oh my God.
For lack of better wording and better terms, yeah. He described it as chattel, meaning property.
Jesus.
He was brought to her, she was brought to him by other crime people, like, here you go. And he was like,
yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And so Fisk, however, saw much, much more in the young girl other than the interest that was there. And it's noted in a story featured in Daredevil Love and War arc. He saw qualities in her that he wanted in a partner. So he could tell that she had a very strategic mind, that she might actually share the same values that he does, mm-hmm. if you will. But in the comics, I'll be honest, Vanessa isn't as... at least she wasn't initially. She wasn't as menacing as the one that we have been exposed to now.
Yeah.
She's actually much more kinder. She was kind of like the levity and the balance in Fisk's life. But over time, she got corrupted and she fell more. You got to see more of like, oh, this is why he's in love with her. And that spread across 20 years. So when you meet Vanessa in, quote unquote, slightly modern times, she's only 35.
Oh, okay.
And they've already had, that's why they have a child and he's a full-fledged adult in college. But unsurprisingly, their dynamic is complicated as it isn't in the comics, and they balance one another, though Vanessa wasn't always in agreement with Fisk. So again, she would correct him. She would say, you're not like them. You don't want to do this. And he'd be like, you're right. And then he would go do it because, you know.
Of course.
And at some point, Vanessa dies of a terminal illness. I suspect it was cancer because she was dragging around an IV and stuff. And so, but like every major love interest, she's brought back to life via resurrection.
Jeez, man.
then they cloned her. So the hand brought her back. Jeff is just, he just dropped.
I mean, this is comic, so it's like, yeah, it is what it is, but God.
They got to sell them books, right? But that's the thing. It's like, it's interesting when there's actual finality and risks taken in live action, because it's so not serious in the comics. You kind of want it to be, right? You want it to be like, she died. She died.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter the other day of saying, I was kind of, what was it? It was like something about like, oh, why is there a possibility, or are they going to bring back whoever in the MCU if they're dead already? Yeah. And then someone quoted like
Natasha,
or just in general. And then someone quotes it as like, it was like, someone hasn't read the comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
right.
They always just bring people back for no reason. And I've learned that over the last couple of years doing this
show.
Pod. And I'm just like, I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
they never stay dead.
They never stay dead. And so it's like when it happens in like MCU, when someone dies and people are always like bring them back. And it's, and then people say like, no, they die. Why would you bring them back? Yeah. And then they do bring them back.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just what happens in comics too. So you can't even be mad.
Right. Yeah. And so it's very much like a discussion of like, well, do they want to take a very realistic approach with death, or do they want to kind of side with the comic books and keep it fantasy, you know?
Yeah. And the whole multiverse thing, like having different like variants and everything.
Yeah. It fixes everything. Yeah. So to speak.
Well, not even that. It was just kind of just like, why would you bring them back? They died for a reason. Yeah, and it's like, I get it. In cinema,
Iron
movies,
Man. Yeah.
Someone's death. Yeah. Has to mean something,
right.
And then for you to, and then, but then for them, so for them to come back, it'd be like, yo, like, what was the point of that then? And then it's like, then you have this argument of like, well,
multiverse.
They did it in the comics.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like, oh,
yeah, I know. It kind of like deflates it all, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So Sim could be said that she had this kind of dramatic death, because you have to remember she killed her son in favor of Fisk. And then she contracts cancer or some debilitating disease and then dies. And you're like, wow, that's really terrible. Because obviously it affected Fisk so deeply that his love of his life was gone and just made him more ruthless, if you will. And then she's resurrected by the hand, which is not unlike Elektra. And then she's brought back and then dies again. And then she's cloned by the same guy who cloned Gwen Stacy.
Jeez.
And the craziest thing, and I forgot it was this modern. I was like, wait, I feel like I've read this before. And I did, because it was in issues of Amazing Spider-Man, the clone saga. And Warren, Dr. Warren, he was the kind of creepy guy, the Jackal, who brings her back and like unveils her to Fisk. And he's like, Vanessa, my love. And she's like, Fisk. And she's kind of like she was in the very beginning of her canon, right?
Yeah.
She's kind of like untainted. And they have this tender moment that lasts a full page. The next page, he's cupping her face. She's cupping his face. Next page, he snaps her neck. And he goes, oh, how dare you? Like, and he gets mad at the Jackal, because he's like, you tainted all that I knew of my wife. And now she's just a clone. Like, you know, he knew. Wasn't the same.
Yes.
And so she was dead. She's apparently still dead as far as we know. So she's gone.
Yeah.
But they did bring her back twice. As for the MCU, oh my goodness. We've talked about this lady quite a bit. Vanessa Mariana Fisk, portrayed by Ailet Zur. First seen season 1, episode 4 of Netflix's Daredevil series. Last seen in the Born Again season finale. So yeah, we've talked about her quite a bit. Just rewind and hit some of those old episodes up where we have talked about Vanessa in length. We probably could still do an episode about her, but we've talked about her quite a bit here as well. But she, she was introduced as this high-end fine arts dealer, and she rose up in the ranks and became essentially what is the equivalent of a queen pin. What's very interesting about her character in the MCU is that she describes this family that she came from, where the father was a drunk and her mother was weak. And so as a result, she lacked respect for her mother, which explains a lot of how her personality intensifies over the series run. And that's one of the things that I think really brought them together, is that they both had this terrible upbringing with terrible fathers. And whereas Fisk loved his mother and was protected by his mother, Vanessa was not. And mm-hmm. so that kind of puts them at this interesting arc of things. And yeah, it just intensifies over time. And so I said in this last episode that we did, but I think she's a great counterpart for Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh yeah.
Especially. And I am like kind of frightened by her at times, because she has a presence about her as well. And it is kind of insane that she was once for a moment recast. And she was going to be replaced by actress Sandrine Holt, but she was dismissed after they switched back and reworked the series.
Yeah.
So imagine a world without...
That dynamic duo.
So insane. And so as we careen into this last bit here, speaking of dynamic duos, notable adversaries, there are two that come to mind. First one, Peter Parker, Spider-Man. So again, for some,
I hope it happens. I know. They need. It's like the perfect pairing actors right now. Imagine Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin and Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
So great
interacting.
Yeah, and also it's just like the callback of like he originated in a Spider-Man title.
Yeah.
To not have them intersect.
As much as like Daredevil and Kingpin need each other, at its core, it's still, you know,
it's Spidey and Kingpin. Yeah. Kingpin. And so, yeah, for many, it may be surprising that Kingpin is very much a Spider-Man villain at his core, despite how well he's been transplanted over to the world of Daredevil. And while Fisk has truly become Daredevil's arch nemesis, the truth is he seems to hate Spidey more. Can you guess why? He would hate Spidey more.
More than
Daredevil? It's so stupid. It's because Spidey makes fun of his weight. So it's like the quips. Like Daredevil's very straightforward and like, I gotta stop you, Fisk.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, he's like, hey, fatty. I mean, like,
hey, tubby.
He doesn't he hates him because of that. That's the only reason he hates Spider-Man more. It's so funny. And he makes it fun of the size, but the rotundness of him. Yeah,
it's so funny.
That's what's worth reading the Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
You don't get that in Daredevil. It's like, oh no, I want the petty.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And so one of the most notable conflicts between Spidey and Fisk, however, involves who else but Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat. I know. This is what could really pull them in, right? Maybe not.
Well, I think the thing is, too, because like what Vincent said, small tangent, what Vincent said recently is the rights thing. He's not allowed in movies.
In movies, yeah.
And Spidey's not allowed in shows.
That's so nuts. I'm like, come on.
So it's like...
Yeah.
Someone's got a break.
Someone. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Like someone's. Yeah.
But. Oh, I know. So yeah, if anything could this, I mean, it would be a great tie-in to introduce this, but it is overall for everybody except for Black Cat, kind of like a minor subplot in that while she was dating Spider-Man, she had a humbling moment where she was like, I'm surrounded by all these people, all these superheroes.
Yeah.
They all have abilities. I'm just really good at what I do. How can I keep up with him if he's super powered and I'm just a thief, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So she sought out someone who could give her powers. She went to the Avengers. She went to the Fantastic Four. Cap literally is like, weren't you a felon? Get out of here.
Didn't you steal things?
Yeah. He literally dismisses her and she's like, oh, no one wants to help me. And so she finally arrives at this place and explains her reasoning, and they're like, sure, we'll help you. And she, for weeks and weeks, she undergoes all these tests, all these different procedures to help manifest some sort of superpower in her. Mm-hmm. And she finally succeeds, and she's like, oh, I'm starting to realize that I don't have to set booby traps and finagle like electric wires and stuff. They all go haywire on their own. If I think about it, things go wrong for whoever is chasing me. This is great. I have probability powers. And then it's revealed that Fisk is who gave her these powers, and his scientists and all these people helped her become this person. And so she was kind of mortified because it's the Kingpin. And then he unveils, he's like, oh, but you know, I want you to live up to your, you know, potential, whatever. And she tells him very plainly, I will never hurt Spider-Man. You know that, right? And he goes, yes, I know. But of course, he lied to her. He was expecting her to hurt him.
Yeah.
And this happens to take place when Peter is in the black suit. So what they thought was just Peter having a bad day, it's actually her powers.
Wow.
So he was losing his webbing and all
that.
Yeah. It's in part because she's around. And so when she realizes, she hates him. She hates Kingpin.
Yeah.
Because of that. And so she lost what she considered a great love of her life because of this. And so it's like, careful what you wish for. And so, as is similar with Daredevil, Fisk's presence in Spidey is substantial due to the fact that he's referred to as his crime capers. So Sinister Six, he's kind of like the guy that brought them all together, like in the game. Similar situation. So that's kind of like his presence in Spider-Man over time. It's like, oh, the Kingpin, he's up to his crime capers. And then in Daredevil, it's more of like, no, there's actually like meat story that really aligns with Daredevil and that suite of characters. And so as for the MCU, like you said, we want it. We ain't gonna get it unless somebody buckles. So unless Marvel makes some attempt to own Sony Pictures.
Or just let Sony give the permission, man.
I know. It's like, just take
like, how
money.
Much more proof do you need?
It's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
And people, again, we've said this time and again, people want it.
Like, obviously your most recent live actions have been subpar.
You mean Kraven the Hunter?
Dude, lion's blood, man.
Lion's blood. Radioactive lion's blood.
Like, just, you know?
Yeah.
At least, give like a proper, like, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what's happening in Brand New Day, you know? But just...
If they did it for No Way Home, they can do it again. They might have doubled the fee, but
I've heard like Brand New Day could be more street level.
Yeah.
Spidey. And it's kind of like, well, how are you going to have a street level Spidey if you can't have a street level villain, which is that of Kingpin?
I also heard that Zendaya has a smaller role.
Because she's going to die.
I don't think they'll ever do that, but
you can't really kill Zendaya.
Yeah. That'd be wild. But yeah, it's kind of... We'll see. We'll find out in a year, I guess. Jeez.
True.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, a man he is very much involved with on screen and off, Matt Murdock, love of his life, Daredevil.
Exactly. Pretty much. Yeah. Yin and Yang.
Yin and Yang. So yeah, our Daredevil episode was ages ago, number 37. So I can't even immediately recall what we discussed, but needless to say, these two have beef. Fisk very quickly was introduced in Daredevil Volume 1, number 170. And so it is quite honestly a polar opposite to the Spider-Man appearance, in that it just gives an entirely different vibe. So on the cover of Daredevil Volume 1, 170, you very much see it is symbolic to their relationship in that Kingpin quite literally has Daredevil in his clutches.
Ooh, and so it's a big boy.
This versus that. Yes, he is a big boy, literally and figuratively. Very different.
Yeah.
Very different first appearance presence. Yeah. And so, yeah, his first appearance in Daredevil was definitely one for the books, literally. And so Daredevil is doing Daredevil things. He's very much like Spider-Man, but he's much more serious. He's fighting crime, being misunderstood, being sad. wearing red, and then once again encounters Turk in the issue. Turk is in every fourth issue in classic comics, and so there's talk about this big $5 million payoff for the guy who used to run Hell's Kitchen and ends up being the Kingpin, and so it actually gives us a glimpse into the history of Fisk once again, in that when he went abroad, he stayed in Japan, and he was so wealthy off of the crimes he committed, he was able to buy a mansion, which is essentially a giant temple, and he's in this like baby thong, and he's sumo wrestling against a bunch of martial artists.
Okay,
but he's refining his skills, and so he's taking everybody down, and he's again surprisingly swift and fast given his size, and so he's surrounded by his riches, his guns. The whole shebang. He's living the Kingpin life.
Yes.
And so at this time, he had taken leave from the U.S. to clean up his act, sort of, right? Mm-hmm. It was really just to seek refuge. And then later on down the line, by this point, he's married to Vanessa as well. So for the most part, it seems like she's got a good effect on Fisk. Until, of course, as fate would have it, she enlists the aid of Nelson Murdoch to represent him.
Wow.
Yeah. And then all hell breaks loose when this minor enemy sort of character, Bruno, he intervenes. There's gunfire. Vanessa is caught in crosshairs. She's kidnapped. And to make matters worse, Bullseye just gets out of jail.
Okay.
So it goes from pretty decent to, oh God, what is happening?
Chaos.
Very quickly.
That is chaos. Pure right there.
Chaos. Like, it was a good day for Matt Murdock until like 3 p.m. And so they get into it too, and this all ends with a cliffhanger, and Fisk has reemerged because he's going to find his wife, and he finally in that moment embraces that he has become the Kingpin once again. So again, it's a few more years down the line from his Spider-Man era, and then this entire journey has brought him back, and now he's at the Devil's Door. And so more than 600 appearances later, he's clearly solidified his place in Marvel Comics canon. And so their story is, again, we've talked about this many times in different nuances and different varieties and flavors, but if you want to know more about Fisk and Matt's very, 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 very complicated relationship, definitely read more. We'll talk about some suggested reads later, but very quickly, not that we haven't talked about them enough.
I know.
Matt Murdock, Daredevil, portrayed by Ben Affleck in 2003's Daredevil, most recently portrayed by the GOAT, my cinnamon roll, Charlie Cox, as of 2015. Yeah, so we've talked about him ad nauseum by now. But but yeah, check out previous episodes. So it's interesting because, yeah, vigilantes are officially getting the short end of the stick with Mayor Fisk in office.
What was that order that he, the vigilante order that he ordered? Yeah. I forget. That
it was kind of like,
it was like a vigilante, anti-vigilante, you know?
Right.
It's a kind of like,
didn't they have to review? It's kind of like the Sokovia Accords,
almost,
right?
But then it's also like, it's like on site. Because I remember in the finale, they shot a kid for stealing.
Right.
For
but
looting.
He was a vigilante.
And then they're like, well, he's just a kid. And he's like, no, he's not. He's a vigilante. And they put him.
Martial law. It's martial law effect. Yeah.
So season two is going to be insane.
It's going to be spicy as hell.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And so this relationship is going to be complicated and fascinating till the very end. And it, I'm sure you saw it, but the rumor has it that they're looking to continue Daredevil as a series for seasons, quote unquote, not four as in the number, but for like years and years and years and years.
I wonder if they are going to do more, because I think after, I don't know what the rule is. I think it's after four seasons.
Right.
It's they syndication for a series. So then that's when you have to, that's when you start renegotiating. Mm-hmm. Do you want to keep going?
Makes sense. Yeah.
So that's why in today's, I mean, another side tangent on like the media, it's like, that's why shows don't really go as long as they do anymore because
the negotiation process.
Because after syndication, you know, of course, actors, crews, they want more money because like, yo, we're doing this. It's like the most stable thing you can do. Mm-hmm. But studios don't want to pay that money because they're cheap.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's
like,
why you only get like as many seasons as you do. That's why
we might only get four.
Yeah.
We may only get four. Yeah. For
but
Fisk,
if they really
least.
Care, they wouldn't. They'd keep going. But
I know.
Yeah.
For the fans.
Yeah.
Nah, they just want the money.
Yeah.
They're their own kingpin.
Yeah. It also depends on like, do actors like want to do something else?
Yeah.
still continue on the side tangent. Before, when they would do these cable, yeah. when you do the what was it, network show, network sitcoms, mm-hmm. cable network shows with long amount of seasons, it's mm-hmm. usually actors who aren't. Like they're not like huge yet. Yeah. They're not like small huge screen. A-list. You know, it's kind of mm-hmm. like they book something that's consistent mm-hmm. and they're going to keep doing it because, you know, money's good. But then there are sometimes actors like they'll do the same thing, but mm-hmm. then it's like, I think I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. And so if that happens, then it's like, okay, then what do you do? Do you just
recast?
Do you just write the ending kind of like How I Met Your Mother season 9? Like Jason Segel didn't want to do another season.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, oh, okay, like, no, mm-hmm. like, just do one more, and then this will be the end of it. And so mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, like...
Yeah.
There's a lot of politics that go into it, but it's like, mm-hmm. who knows? Like, I know fans will want to have 5 seasons of, mm-hmm. you know, this 6 season, 10 seasons, mm-hmm. you know, like, Modern Family.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know how much money they're willing to... And yeah.
Especially with the complication with Fisk, just as usage, you know, alone, so... If you think about it, they've had to pay for him to appear in Hawkeye, to appear in Echo.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, God. So that, on top of everything else, just like, well, I mean, I'm sure they're willing to invest in him as long as it's viable. And I'm sure Vincent will do it as long as it's right. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And so as for other versions and in other media, like Jeff mentioned up top, video games. So... It's funny enough that Fisk actually has over 20 appearances in video games since 1990. So he's been in a game for almost one game every other year.
Yeah.
And he's played a particularly notable part in Sony Spider-Man 1, where he was voiced by Travis Willingham with a smaller role in the Miles Morales spinoff. Yeah, and similarly to other versions of the character, powerful figurehead, construction company, art house. And
money laundering.
Money laundering.
That's what he's doing.
Slowly trying to find control over the city. And then it's interesting because in the dialogue and in the files, you see that Spidey got into it with Fisk, threw him in jail. Mm-hmm. And he was in jail for like 5 years or something. Then he gets out. And that's where the first game starts, is that he's out of jail. He's doing this whole new
thing. He's a changed man.
Changed man, yeah. And then I noted he is painfully powerful because I cannot tell you enough how many times I died when he was throwing like columns at you.
That first fight, man, I was like, oh, I got to throw this minigun at him? Yeah. I guess.
Right. And he's literally pulling parts of the building off.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when I hit him, he loses like 10 HP. But when he hits me, I lose half of mine. Hello.
And then he would laugh and he'd run. Like, and oh, I'm like,
get up, Spidey. We're not done yet.
Killing me.
Pissing me off. Man.
I was so mad. Yeah. Painfully powerful. And so, yeah, he didn't play as much of a role later in the other games. But he always seems to have a pretty fun presence when it comes to video games. And in animation, the most notable is by far the Into the Spider-Verse Kingpin, where he's voiced by Sabretooth, Liev Schreiber.
Hilarious.
From the Wolverine, or Wolverine Origins.
Yes.
And so in the film's Earth 1610, Fisk was attempting to reconstruct the Collider as means of bringing his dearly departed wife and son back from the dead, eventually going toe-to-toe with various spider family in the process. And then, of course, the coveted Matt Murdock Easter egg that hilarious. If you pause it right at the right moment, Richard Fisk looks like Matt Murdock.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. So that does exist in the ether. As for Almost Was, could not find any other actors who had auditioned for the role, Netflix or film. Did not find anything. But Stephen DeKnight, as far as his version is concerned for Netflix, he was pretty set on Vincent from the beginning, and he noted in an interview, this is a pretty long quote, so bear with me, "We wanted to make sure that the casting was right. I had sleepless nights over trying to cast Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, and my feeling was there was only one person who could do it, and that was Vincent D'Onofrio. And I remember telling Jeff Loeb, I sent him a picture of Vincent with a shaved head on the internet, and I said, come on, there's nobody else like that. Nobody else that can do this. This is Kingpin. And Jeff said, yeah, we love him too, but he's way too expensive. He was on Law and Order. He makes $1 million an episode. We'll never get him. He continued, But it turns out a couple of months later, our casting director, Larry Mayfield, was personal friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, let me just check and see if there's any interest. And it turns out Vincent was a huge Daredevil fan and a huge comic book fan of Daredevil. And he said, yeah, I'd love to do it. Look, we'll work something out on the price.
Wow.
So.
Wait, he was getting $1 million an episode on Law and Order?
That's what I'm saying.
Wait, how many episodes? Because I love SVU growing up. Like, I loved Law and Order. How often was he on the show?
I have no idea.
He was making that much? Because Benson and Stabler are still on that show, man.
Bro. Vincent D'Onofrio appeared in 141 episodes of Law and Order Criminal Intent.
Oh, Criminal Intent. Yes.
Intent, sorry. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
But
yes.
141 episodes. That's $141 million.
Yeah. See, that's why going back to like what I said earlier about like
Kingpin IRL.
Yeah. Like that's what I was saying about earlier about like shows like that during that time. So like the Law and Orders.
Yeah.
The Modern Families shows that, I mean, The Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
And there's a reason
Ellen Pompeo
did a,
Karen Page.
Yeah. She did an interview like recently and saying like, why do you keep still?
She literally say it was because of the money?
Yeah. She's because of the money.
Yeah.
It's like having a stable job.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like why would I leave a stable job where I know what I'm going to be doing? I work so this crazy. Amount of year time a year.
Yeah.
And it's like, rather than going to you leave to go do a movie, you shoot for 1, 2, 3 months.
Right.
And yes, she'll probably make this amount of money.
That's so crazy.
But she doesn't have to do that. And I think Ellen Pompeo is also in like another like limited series too on Hulu.
Yeah.
But it's like that'll only take like maybe one month to film.
You ready for another mind blowing thing?
Yes.
Holy moly. So, where he was making $1 million for Law and Order per episode, and he negotiated for his love of comic books and Daredevil, he's doing Daredevil episodes as of 2025 for $200,000 an episode.
It's pretty much scale for depending who...
That's wild.
Depending what kind of actor you are, yeah.
So he's doing 5 for the equivalent of 1 that he was doing Law and Order for.
Yeah.
Man loves Daredevil.
That also just goes to show like how much he loves the character.
That's incredible. I love that.
He doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't have to.
But then again, there's probably like other things too that's on the back end that you know, we're not. That's probably like his salary.
Yeah, exactly.
But then depending on how it does award season or I don't know how you track, you know, viewings and ratings on streaming, but he probably gets a back end kicker on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. So as far as the future of the character in the MCU goes, we know that there's going to be a season 2. We know there's not going to be a film. So what do you think is in the future for Wilson Fisk?
I think it's just going to be Daredevil Born Again until you decide to end it.
Well, I think they'll do a Born Again season 2.
Yes.
And then they'll move on to another.
They'll do
arc.
A 3. I think they'll do a 3.
I think they'll transfer onto like Daredevil Love and War or something.
Oh, like a whole
different.
Like
they're going to do another story arc or.
Because I don't know how in the comic book version, I don't know how the mayoral timeline of Fisk ends. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm,
I just know that he is a mayor in one of the story runs.
Yeah.
So I don't know how this ends.
Yeah,
like at least in the comics,
they can change it tremendously.
Yeah,
they
at least in the comics, I don't know how you know you bring him down as mayor and expose him.
Yeah, they've kind of like mixed things up too because you know, like back in the day with Born Again, the storyline, like it's the whole Karen Page thing, and then the mayor thing. It's I don't want to say it's multi decades, but he's been mayor in modern comics and Born Again. Is an older storyline.
Yeah.
So they're really melding things together. So yeah, I'm curious how long he will be mayor and then how long it'll last. Because obviously there's going to be an end game at some point.
Yeah.
They might do a flash forward for a minute.
Then
things start to crumble, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know how long they're going to keep doing Daredevil. I mean.
I would like a couple more seasons. I'd be okay with it. If it inevitably ends and it ends well,
Yeah,
I'll be content. But I still do want to see Matt and his other suite of dedicated characters.
I say they give us one more than the Netflix series. One more season more. Mm. Like, if you can get us to four.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if you decide, like, if there's more story that you want to tell, do to tell, and the actors want to keep... I think that's also a thing, too. I think people...
Yeah, if they don't
want to
do
I think people
anymore.
Forget, like, like, yeah, you want more Daredevil, but it's also just, like, do the actors want to keep playing that character? Yeah,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
And they sometimes they don't.
Yeah, because...
A lot of times they don't.
Yeah. And it's like, how much time is it going to take, you know? So,
yeah. So I think as long as it feels right, as long as he has the right support, he'll probably go as long as the show goes. And then eventually it'll end. I don't think he'll die. I think
the story will just end.
Yeah.
You kind of just got to... Sometimes people don't have to die. Just story ends.
The raft.
Yeah.
Chained up like an animal.
I would like four seasons.
Yeah. It seems like a nice number.
Yeah. And if you can give us at least 9 to 10 episodes, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be down, man. Let's go. So, suggested reading... 2010's Punisher Max, Kingpin, from Jason Aaron and Steve Dillon. So this is notably one of the most quintessential Kingpin reads. Mm-hmm. Super graphic, super, very in it, very, very brutal, very representational of Kingpin. Jason Aaron is pretty known for his bold writing, so definitely a read. 1986's, speaking of, Daredevil, Love and War, from Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz. Frank Miller can be kind of polarizing as a figurehead, but his work on the Daredevil series, especially this one, is pretty magical, especially with Bill Sienkiewicz penning the art. He's the one that did the art of Kingpin, essentially taking up the entire page. Mm-hmm. Very multi-layered, very multimedia, very beautiful artwork. Complex and narrative in its own way. 1986's Daredevil Born Again, a.k.a. Daredevil numbers 227 through 233 from Frank Miller, David Mazzucchelli, and Christy Max Scheel. And of course, last but not least, classic issues of Amazing Spider-Man, particularly 50 through 52, the In the Clutches of the Kingpin arc from Stan Lee, John Romita, and Mike Esposito. So all of that said, that is the end of the show. Holy moly.
That boy Kingpin.
Big boy. Thanks for listening. Next episode, like we mentioned up top, it feels like forever, but Thunderbolts season is finally here. And we'll be discussing the film in all of its gritty, wonderful, chock full of spoilers details. Woo! So join us in a couple of weeks for that. Make sure to go see the film too while you can. And of course, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to Sherry, Laura, Katie, Robin, Edgar, Jenny, Joe Liz, Nats, Ariel, Melanie, Andrew, Ed, Tyler, Andrea, Ashley, and Chris. Follow us on social at STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Wesley. Did you know, back in ancient times, they would cut the tongues out of their bodyguards their first day on the job? You think that's horrible, don't you? Because you don't like the physical stuff.